Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Writer and podcaster Blind Boy Boat Club, good afternoon.
What's the crack, Brendan? How are you getting on?
I'm good, thanks. You're very welcome, Blind Boy. And we asked you to pick five pieces of music that have special meaning for you. And I think you are one of those people for whom music has very special meaning. Your first choice is T-Rex, Ride a White Swan. Where does this song bring you back to?
My first day of school. I've mentioned it before, I got diagnosed as autistic later on in my life, you know. And when you go for a diagnosis as an adult for anything to do with neurodivergence, one of the first questions is, what was your first day of school like? And my first day of school, I might have been about maybe 5 years of age. I was one of those kids who was supposed to go at four, and then they said, he's not ready, give him another year. So I went at five, and I just remember crying and crying and not stopping. And I looked around and I saw some other kids were crying too, but then eventually they kind of calmed down, and then it was just left with me crying after maybe 2 hours until I eventually just got sick everywhere, which was, it wasn't great. And I remember feeling incredibly different, and it was so bad that the teachers, who were nuns, were like, look, we got to call his parents back in. They got to come back in because we can't calm this kid down. So my parents were at work, so my older brother had to come in. And when he came in, he had with him a tape. And the tape was Mark Bolan and T-Rex, because even from about, I'd say, 1 year of age, I was obsessed with music. Yeah. And my brother said to the nun, play him this tape, this T-Rex here, and I promise you he'll stop crying. And the nun said, no, this is adult music. We only play kids' music in here. And she started playing some silly nursery rhymes on the tape, and I started crying more. And when I got my diagnosis as an adult, that got me several ticks on the box for autism, because they were like, oh, okay, so your nervous system was overstimulated by, you know, people just like being out of routine,
okay,
being in a classroom full of people. And then your nervous system was calmed by music, that's quite common for, I mean, no two autistic people are the same. For some other person who's neurodivergent, it might be rocking back and forth that gets them calm, or looking at trains or something. For me, it was music. So that's why I want to play this song, Ride a White Swan.
They did play it for you eventually.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't, unfortunately.
Really?
They didn't. And I felt a great deal of shame because they wouldn't play it. I felt wrong and different. I was like, what do you mean it's adult music? What is adult music? This is brilliant. Why can't I play this? Is there something wrong with it?
And you still remember that shame, do you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I tell you what, and I'll get onto it on a later song, but like, you know, I cried so much I vomited everywhere. And when I vomited everywhere, sure, everyone's staring at you.
Yeah.
Everyone. And you become an object of disgust at 5 years of age. And then when I became an adult, at maybe 19, 20, and I had pretty bad anxiety, the specific fear that I had was, what if I vomit in public?
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
And I had to go back to that earliest memory to go, oh, sure, that's why you get a fear like that. It's rooted in your, I mean, things, when things happen to you when you're four or five, they can really stick, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, the nuns wouldn't play it for you then. We'll play it for you now. This is Blind Boy Boat Club's first music choice, T-Rex, Ride a Wild Swan. That's Blind Boy's first music choice, T-Rex, Ride a White Swan. Blind Boy is nearly crying for that four-year-old boy listening to that. When you think of that, that could have just kind of, how that would have held him. So next up, you've gone for a song that reminds you of Limerick, your home. And it's the Elvis Costello song, Shipbuilding. But you've chosen the version by Robert Wyatt. So why have you chosen this song?
I'm skipping forward now from being five years of age to just a couple of weeks ago. I was over in Camden. I'd won an award there a couple of weeks ago, the Grierson Award, for a documentary I made on RTE1. And I was at the award ceremony.
No, you're selling that short very casually there, but this was a huge award to win, wasn't it?
It was fairly big. It's like one underneath an Oscar. when it comes to documentaries. Like, I'm really, really happy with it. I wasn't expecting it at all.
Okay, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. I wasn't expecting it so much that when I was there at the award ceremony, I kind of wasn't even paying attention when they were like announcing the names. And I was there in this building, the Camden Roundhouse, and I was just, the award ceremony is on and around me. And I'm going, what an amazing building. It's completely round. And then I start whipping out my phone, Googling what the building is. And the building is it was like a turntable where they used to put trains in the Victorian times. And then that turned into, in the 1960s, a very important venue for progressive rock music. Pink Floyd, UFO, one band in particular, Soft Machine, were this incredible, they would have been a progenitor to heavy metal. And the drummer, Robert Wyatt, in 1970, he got into a terrible accident and he was paraplegic. So one of the greatest drummers in the world lost the use of his legs, and his solo work, he kept going. He kept going and became an incredible singer and songwriter, regardless of whether he could use his legs. And one of the songs he released, which it was an Elvis Costello song, Shipbuilding. And just what I love about this song is it's like a deconstruction of capitalism. It's a song from the perspective of people in like Belfast or people in Liverpool whose jobs were taken away by Thatcher in industry. But when the Falkland War comes in the early 80s, these people are thrilled because it means that ships are going to be built. And they're like, we're going to be able to get bicycles for our kids on their birthday now because war is coming. And it was just such a, it hits you in the chest because it shows you there are communities that rely upon war because the system is so evil. And it makes me think of Limerick because that's Limerick's history. Limerick, we used to make a lot of cloth and fabric for the British Army. And even today, you know, we've got the corporate headquarters of Uber are in Limerick City, and a lot of people have issues with the Uber's ethics as a corporation. But at the same time, them in Limerick, there's cafes and shops open simply because those headquarters are here. So shipbuilding reminds me of that.
Yeah, nothing simple, is it? Can I ask you, and look, I know that you don't know probably where you end and autism begins, and autism is part of you and is who you are and everything. That going down into that rabbit hole while you're sitting in the roundhouse at the, is that no?
That's fairly
classic,
autistic, yeah.
Yeah,
is no, it is, because the thing is right, I'm in the middle of getting an award announced, so that's a bad time to whip out Wikipedia and start thinking about the building that you're in.
Yeah.
So they had to call my name out twice because I'm sitting down looking at Wikipedia at the back with a bag in my head.
But is it?
And that'll get you a tick on the autism box because they go, well, neurotypical people usually think that that's important.
Important not to be wearing a bag and important to be paying attention.
Yeah. So, but to be honest, if I was given a second choice, I'm still glad I went and found out about the building. It's fascinating. I'm still talking about it. I'm still thinking about it. You know?
And is that like Ride a White Swan, is that you going into a comfort zone of facts, finding out about things, like the curiosity about the world, obsessing about detail, yeah?
So being at that award ceremony wasn't very pleasant for me because there was 2,000 or 3,000 people there and it was incredibly overstimulating. Like, I don't have social anxiety. It's just I'm quite overstimulated by being around loads of people. So I found ways over the years to deal with that. One of them is retreating into facts, retreating into my comfort zone of, so if I'm overstimulated in a building, the first thing I'll do is I'll learn about that building. Same if I'm in a new city. If I'm in a new city, like London, and it's very busy, there's loads of people, I'll start going, okay, that's an interesting building. Let's read about that. And now I'm calm, you know? It's just a way for me to calm my nervous system, to calm the way that I am.
And in a way then, like, look, we won't use the word superpower about autism, but in a way that has become your way of kind of making a living and a purpose in the world as well, hasn't it?
That's, and I am cautious about using superpower because, so for me specifically, I can say, yes, it is. I've managed to do that. But when I speak about being autistic, I can't speak for any other person because there's other people and they're not getting on okay, you know? So I'm the rare example. I'm very lucky. Man, I could have been interested in toasters. I could have had that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just very lucky that I have varied interests and I'm able to focus, and the things that I can focus on can operate within capitalism. I mean, that's all I can say. Like,
yeah, yeah, you're focusing on marketable things. Okay, here's Blind Boy's second choice: Robert Wyatt and Shipbuilding.
Is it worth it? A new winter coat and shoes for the wife.
That's Robert Wyatt and Shipbuilding, and that's Blind Boy's second music choice today. Blind Boy, I think school was tough for you. You got expelled at one point. Of all people, Jamie Oliver told me something very interesting recently. Very simple thing. He said that always, going back millennia, there have been people who functioned, their brains functioned differently in the tribe and they had different purposes and everything.
Yeah.
And a few hundred years ago, we invented an education system and it was totally geared towards one type of brain.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the classic example there is dyslexia. And you can see it in, do you know the way English pubs in particular are called things like the Dog and Duck or the King's Head?
Yeah.
The reason that is like before the Industrial Revolution, most of the population could not read. Reading was a privilege that very wealthy people had. So pubs, you couldn't put the name of the pub on it because no one would know. So they would go, the one that has the painting of the dog and the duck.
Yeah.
But it meant that you could be dyslexic, which is a form of neurodivergence, and you could go your entire life and not know it.
So they had universal design back then.
Yeah.
And we wrote it back. Okay.
Absolutely. And the other thing too is when the education system comes around, it's like everyone becoming literate is a good thing, but it's the to equate the capacity to read and write with intelligence. That's where we got it wrong, because it meant that the kids that couldn't then were labelled as stupid. And that's where we got it wrong, because then you have all the self-esteem issues that go along with that.
Okay. Were you labelled stupid in school?
Oh, yeah. Stupid, disruptive, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Unless I did a drawing or, when I was speaking about things that I was particularly passionate about. I mean, one of the happiest moments of my school years, I was about five. The teacher heard me talking about dinosaurs and they said, my God, how does he know this much about dinosaurs? And they took me up to a class of 7 or 8 year olds.
Yeah.
And they got me to teach the 8 year olds about dinosaurs. And I was only five. And all the other teachers came around to marvel at this young fella who knows all about dinosaurs. And I taught myself through encyclopedias. And like that gave me a huge amount of value. And I do see a correlation between that little kid and then winning that big documentary award there a couple of weeks ago, because it's like the realization of that kid, you know?
Yeah, yeah, wonderful. You made it to art college, and I think your next music choice is linked to that time. It's Gil Scott-Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. What's the story behind picking this?
So I was 19, 20, right? And as I mentioned previously, I did end up having very, very, very bad panic attacks and agoraphobia, a fear of living a normal life. When I got to 1920, the routine of school is gone. And now all my friends in college are going to pubs and going to nightclubs. Okay. And I wasn't, because I was terrified of these spaces, really, really frightened. And when I tried to go there, I'd get a full-blown anxiety attack. And the anxiety attack was, what if I vomit here for no reason? But when you get a panic attack in public, everyone stares at you, so it makes it worse. So I just avoided living a normal life when I was like 19, 20, completely avoided it. But in college, I had access to free counselling. And I went to a counsellor every week, and the counsellor said to me, listen, we can use CBT here. I know you're scared of going to pubs, you're scared of going to nightclubs, but why not just show up? Just try and stay by the door if that's what works for you. Stay by the door and you can leave in 10 minutes, but at least try. It's better than doing nothing. So that's what I did. And one night I went to a nightclub. It was Trinity Rooms in Limerick. It was about, I'd say 20 maybe. And I'm there terrified. Just all these people all around me. I'm feeling intense shame. I don't feel normal. And I'm by the door and I'm saying to myself, I'm not going to go further than this door. Right, I can run out at any point, but I'm definitely not going into that club, into that crowd. And then a song comes on. And this is before the days of Shazam. This is before the days of having a mobile phone even. I don't know, Nokia, no smartphones. So this tune comes on and I hear it and I go, if I don't find out the name of this song, I'm never going to know what this song is. And what made it so phenomenal was, I'm like, I can tell that this song is from the early 70s, but the dude is rapping. This is rap music, but it's before rap was invented. And this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. I must find out what this song is. So I made a beeline for the DJ and I walked all the way through the club, through the crowd, not a bother on me. And I asked the DJ, what's this song? And he says to me, man, this is Gil Scott-Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And I had to write it down on my palm because there's no, what am I going to do? Put it into my phone? To write it down on my palm and make sure my palm didn't sweat so much from the anxiety that the name was gone. And then I left the club immediately, got into a taxi, went home, and then had to write it on a piece of paper and go into HMV and order a Gil Scott-Heron album with that song on it. That's what life was like back then before the social media and the internet. But yeah, what I then reflected on when I took it to my psychotherapist, it was like, look at what you just did there. You overcame your anxiety. You did what you didn't think was possible. You walked into a crowd of people. And then I realized I did, because of the transcendent power of music, because of what music and my passions and curiosity does to my nervous system. I was calm enough then that I wasn't being owned by anxiety and I didn't think it was possible. So that's why this song sticks out for me. It was really important to me for overcoming anxiety.
Wonderful. Okay, here it is. The song that made Blind Boy metaphorically crawl over broken glass. Gil Scott-Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And like the references are a bit out of date, but the heart of it's still as relevant as it ever was, mm-hmm. even in the social media age and everything else. Gil Scott-Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, and that's Blind Boy's third choice today. Now, your next choice as a connection to your dad. Before we get to that, what were your parents like?
They were sound. My ma's still around. She's listening now, so I have to watch out.
Okay.
But my dad died when I was about 20. That was tough going. My dad was, I suppose you'd have called him a communist. He was a communist. He yeah. he was really cared about social justice, was not a fan of capitalism. He worked in Shannon Airport. He was a union leader there, big into the unions. He very much, like I remember being, like his dad was in the Tom Barry's Flying Column down in Cork in the IRA. And so he grew up with that sense of justice. And one of my earliest memories, it would have been when Rodney King, remember the Rodney King mm-hmm. beating in 1992? So it was a black man in America who was brutalized by police, and it was all over the news. And it was on the news anyway, and they were sensationalizing it. And I was very, very young, about 5 years of age maybe, and I was staring at it, frightened. And my dad came up and says to me, do you see that man being beaten on the TV there? He goes, that's your grandfather. That's your grandfather. That's who that is. And that stuck with me. His sense of solidarity with people who are oppressed under either capitalism or colonization.
So like 20 is not great to lose your dad. But in another way, it sounds like you got to know him fairly well, did you? Like you've a good sense of him.
I did, but I'm a middle-aged man now. And the thing is that the issue with that is I've no context for having a conversation with my dad as an adult. That's the thing.
Okay.
This wonderful thing happens when you get into your 20s and your parents stop becoming religious figures nearly. Your parents stop becoming gods and they become fallible human beings. And you're able to look at your ma or your dad and see their insecurities and fallibilities and see them as equal human beings. So I never got to do that with my dad because I hadn't reached that level of maturity yet. So all of my frame of reference for my dad is from a childhood and teenage perspective. Yeah. And that's tough going.
But it sounds like, is there a lot of him in you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's where I got a sense of social justice from. It's where I got a sense of looking, analysing systems of power and critiquing them. I got that from my dad.
Everyone can say they got that from their dad. That's very good. Analysing systems of power and critiquing them. So explain to me about Stevie Wonder.
This is guys.
And this song and the piece of carpet.
So my dad worked in Shannon Airport, right? And you have to remember with Shannon Airport, from about the 1950s up until the early 90s, Shannon Airport was very, very important internationally. If any plane flew from America to Europe, it had to stop in Shannon Airport. That's just how things were. And what that meant was every single person who was incredibly famous had to stop in Shannon Airport. Like Che Guevara in the, I think it was 60, 61, Che Guevara like had to stop in Shannon Airport overnight, and he went on the lash in Limerick.
Yeah.
Like everyone, Michael Jackson, the Pope, the whole shebang. And when they came to Shannon Airport, they went into the VIP room. And the Shannon Airport VIP room of the 70s and 80s was proper. Like it had to be ready for if an American president was going to arrive. This was just how it was. So in the early 90s, they were throwing out the carpet in this VIP room.
Right.
And my dad was like, Jesus, that's an incredible carpet. It's made of wool. This is an astounding carpet. You're just going to put it in the bin. So my dad rescued the carpet of the Shannon Airport VIP room from a bin and then took it back home and was like, we're going to put this in the living room. So they did. So we had this unbelievable woolen carpet in the living room, right? And when my brothers would be listening to music and they'd all be going, I wonder, is that where David Bowie stood? I wonder, is that where Bob Dylan stood? Because it was a fact.
Amazing.
Everyone who was famous had stood on the carpet in my living room. And then they go, what about Stevie Wonder? Did Stevie Wonder stand there? But sure, I'm a little kid listening to this. And then I'm going into school and I'm already being perceived as a bit strange. And then, of course, I start saying to the teachers, yeah, the Pope was in my living room and Stevie Wonder as well. Stevie Wonder stood in my living room. And then the teacher would go, no, they didn't. And I'd go, yes, they did. And I'd get real annoyed. Because I'm like, my parents will tell you, and so are my brothers, Stevie Wonder was in my living room. So they ring up my ma anyway. And my ma had to go, he's not wrong. So that's why I want to play this. And as well, it's a banger. It's a banger. It's from Songs in the Key of Life. I mean, a lot of people know that album, but this is just an absolutely gorgeous song. And it's 1975, I think, and it's years ahead of its time.
Yeah, totally. All right. Blind Boy's fourth choice, Stevie Wonder, Summer Soft. That's Stevie Wonder, Summer Soft, and that is Blind Boy's fourth music choice today. Blind Boy, when someone is with me in the studio, I can normally assure them during the songs that everything is going well, but you're not here, so just to tell you that people are getting so much out of this, judging by the text. Loving the music choices, but like mainly, I could listen to Blind Boy all day. Brendan, every time I hear Blind Boy, I fall in love with him a little bit more. What an open-hearted, open-minded soul. I adore this man, says someone else's podcast, the most fun, honest and educational one out there. Someone else who clearly doesn't know much about you. Blind Boy's a revelation to me. What an interesting and engaging man. So you're hitting new demographics here, Blind Boy. Great music taste, someone else loving the interview and the music choices. A revelation and an inspiration, great sense and importance of social justice. So, and here's an important one. Brendan, Blind Boy is triggering me and also making me feel understood. I didn't know any of this about him. I very much identify with him. Whoa. So somebody is feeling a bit easier with themselves today. Where are you at in life now? Are you mostly happy most of the time?
I mean, It's being autistic is tough going. Like, I had a neuroscientist recently, Dr. Michael Keane. He read one of my short stories and was like, this is so strange. I want to scan your brain just for the crack for free. So he did. It was an EEG scan. And he was curious as to, you know, what's going on in my head. And we did it and it was good fun. And he found, I suppose what he was looking for is that I have the type of brain that's very handy at connecting things that are unconnected. Mm. And that's, I'm very lucky to have that because that's handy if you're an artist. Like lateral thinking is what you want if you're an artist. But also what he identified was an incredibly stressed brain, a high, high amount of stress and hypervigilance, scanning my environment for threats the whole time. And that's just what happens if you're existing as an autistic person in a world that isn't designed for autistic people. So
that's
it was
hard,
nice,
isn't it?
It's hard going, but it was nice as well to see my thoughts, a picture of it, and to go, okay. Because the thing is that's reversible. My brain isn't like that because I'm autistic. My brain is like that because I'm an autistic person in an environment that stresses them. So I just went straight back to meditation. I meditate every day. All you need is 15 minutes. I meditate. Okay. And then the other two things I do is I cycle in and out to work every day. So I make sure that both of those cycles are mindful cycles. And what that means is while I'm cycling in and out of work, I'm doing nothing but cycling. That's it. All of my thoughts are about my pedals grounded, my feet grounded on the pedals, the smell of the air, the sights around me. Everything is present moment, here and now. And that's it. It's an exercise. And when my thoughts drift into I'm worrying about the future or I'm worried about the past, I just calmly drag them back and go, what does the air smell like? And it's wonderful. I was doing it a couple of weeks ago and it was that lovely November sunset where the sun is weak and the sky just illuminated with this bizarre pink colour. And when it happened, I felt what's called a glimmer. It's this just one, it's a rush of euphoria. We are simply happy to exist.
So you're
to be
part,
alive.
You're part of the universe.
Yeah. It's not far off what some people would report on psychedelics, but you get it through just meditation. It's your nervous system saying, I am safe. I feel safe.
Yeah.
And regular meditation and mindfulness practice, that will get you to that place. So that's what I'm doing at the moment, you know?
Okay.
That's what I'm doing.
Like, you see, knowing all this about you now, I look back on Rubber Bandits with completely different eyes. So it's 15 years ago, actually, this month, since Outside exploded here and abroad, made you very big names. I'd argue that songs like Fellas and Dad's Best Friend, I was looking at the videos again last night, like are mind-blowing works of genius. But how do you reflect on all that now, on that time in your life and on kind of being like a pop star in a way?
I just got, that's what I was doing in my 20s. I mean, that's it. That's what I was doing in my 20s. Yeah. And when you're in your 20s, I hadn't found my voice. So some of it I'm happy with, some of it I'm not. Other bits I'm embarrassed about. I didn't find my voice until I started writing short stories in my... I was 29 when I published my first book. So I was in my 30s. When I got to my 30s, then I found my voice. And that's the thing that... So every artist, when you begin... You're creating, but you're kind of copying other people a bit and you're taking in influences. And then something hits you eventually where there's a little voice inside you and it's only yours. And every single artist has this. And once you find that voice, then you're comfortable. And I didn't get that until I started writing my short stories. And the only way to describe the voice is when I write a short story and I enter a state of flow and I go, this is my voice. It can't be good or bad. There's no such thing. It's just, this is me and I can only be the best version of me, you know?
Yeah.
And I can, like, I compete with myself. I don't think of anyone else's art. I go, I can only be the best version of me. And I get that through short stories.
Okay.
I can do music if I want to, but short stories, that's where I'm at.
Okay, but look, you're absolutely been an amazing version of yourself today, Blind Boy.
Thank you.
So appreciative, and a lot of people really got a lot out of that. So you'll be recording your podcast at live events in February, I know, in Vicar Street, Belfast Waterfront Theatre and Leisureland in Galway. So your final music choice is a Christmas song with a pretty unusual one. We're up against time now, so just set this up for me.
Okay, so it's Christmas in Cape Town by Randy Newman. I want to play it because it's a Christmas song. It never gets played as a Christmas song, but without Randy Newman, I don't think I'd have learned how to write short stories. Yes, he's a songwriter. Yes, it's music, but really Randy Newman is a short story writer. And just what this song is, it's a song about Christmas set in apartheid South Africa. And it's told from the perspective of the character who's a racist. And you can't do that in song. You can get away with it in film. You can do it in short stories. But Randy Newman said, no, this song is a short story and you're just going to have to deal with it.
Okay. So thank you for giving us the final choice we have to deal with. Writer and podcaster, Blind Boy Boat Club. Thank you so much. That was fantastic. And we'll finish up now on your final choice. Some of Randy Newman and Christmas in Cape Town.
Myself, I don't like to drink the way I used to, man. You know, don't seem to get me high. Beer don't taste the way it ought to taste somehow.